Looking for your next favorite podcast? Start here.
The chief floral designer oversees the operations of the White House Flower Shop, and it's a ridiculously demanding job. So just think about how many events the White House hosts every single year.
Our Constitution is very clear that every Kenyan has a right to a clean and healthy environment. I was simply following the Constitution of Kenya.
I watched 5 straight hours of Premier League soccer.
Attaboy.
And it was fantastic.
Welcome to this week's episode of the WVXU Discovery Podcast, Start Here. I'm Trip Eldridge, your podcast jockey. Get set for a quick overview and sample of 3 podcasts today, 2 national and 1 locally produced, to help you navigate the ever-growing world of the podcast phenomenon. Plus, we're introducing the all-new Start Here Blast weekly e-newsletter. You'll get a personalized email with a podcast we feature on Start Here. Just go to wvxu.org/subscribe and select the Start Here Blast email from the bottom of the page. Also, now you can rate Start Here on iTunes. And if you're a fan, a 5-star rating will help others find us in the iTunes gallery. So don't forget to rate us on iTunes today. And now, with special thanks for technical assistance from Cincinnati Public Radio's Jim Nolan and writing research and curation support by Connor Eldridge, it's time to Start Here. Your mother may call you a genius, but living up to that title is pretty hard to do. Luckily, we have the perfect podcast for you. From Maximum Fun comes Part-Time Genius, an educational podcast that feels more like entertainment. Will and Mango, co-founders of the popular media company Metal Floss, join forces to combine facts and fun into one of the smartest and silliest podcasts out there. With in-depth research, fun-filled quizzes, nerdy interviews, and a giant head-scratching question per episode, Part-Time Genius will make you feel like a part-time genius yourself. Discover the real-life inspiration of the Muppets' Swedish Chef, or the future of allergies, the possibility of cryonics, and much more, as Will and Mango lead you on a fun-filled journey to geniushood. Here's a recent episode from Part-Time Genius called "What Are the Most Surprising Jobs at the White House?" In the episode, the guys take a look at some of the most unconventional, non-political staff positions that have come about in the history of the presidential residence. And in this clip, they talk with White House chefs, first family financial advisors, and even presidential beekeepers.
So Jackie Kennedy had something to do with this, or what?
Yeah, and that name I mentioned in there, Dowling, that was Laura Dowling, who served as the chief floral designer under President Obama. And this was definitely a position that was created by Kennedy. The chief floral designer oversees the operations of the White House Flower Shop, and it's a ridiculously demanding job. So just think about how many events the White House hosts every single year. There are 3 full-time assistants, but they frequently bring in volunteers to help with the big projects. And several of the events, like state dinners and such, those actually take months to plan. And Dowling said her schedule often involved 100-hour weeks.
Wow. Well, you know, there's definitely one thing I feel like I have a better understanding of after doing our research for this episode. And, you know, that's the fact that pretty much anyone who works in a full-time capacity at the White House, they're working really long hours. And It's kind of amazing that they last as long as many of them do.
I know you almost see these positions as more patriotic after you hear about them, but
right.
There have only been 5 chief floral designers since Kennedy created the position, and a couple of them were in that position for decades.
Well, I would imagine this is another one where they get to know the president's taste pretty well and maybe even factor that into the style of what they're doing.
Definitely. So during the Obama administration, for example, you'd often see the private quarters with orange and blue flowers. And I didn't realize this earlier, but it kind of makes sense now. And that's because Obama loved the Chicago Bears.
Oh, yeah, that does make sense. Again, something I could get used to if all the flowers reflected my own taste. But all right, well, I think it's time for us to get back to the larger teams that really make the residence at the White House run. And it's also time for you to finally reveal the answer to that big teaser you set up earlier in the show. You know, the answer to who controls that $13 million budget for operating the residence there.
Yeah, I think it's time. So are you ready?
I think so. Play it on me.
Music, please. That's the job of the chief usher. So the title really doesn't accurately reflect the size of the job. And you can think of the chief usher as being like the general manager of a big hotel. But the main difference is there's just one family to please.
Oh, that's interesting. All right. So the chief usher oversees what, like the whole resident staff?
Yeah, that's everything from the team of ushers to the housekeeping staff to the butlers, both of which we should talk about as well. and the chefs, the florists, and anyone else involved in running the residence. So all $13 million worth of costs falls under the chief usher. And since I've been talking a lot about Jackie Kennedy and her influence on the White House, I'm actually going to quote her. She described their chief usher, J.B. West, as the most powerful man in Washington next to the president.
Oh, wow.
I know. It's crazy, right? And so I know you mentioned the book by Kate Anderson Brower. It's called The Residence: Inside the Private World of the White House. And in the book, she actually talks about West and all the tasks he does. It's really stunning. So he did everything from helping search the residence for Carolyn Kennedy's missing hamsters to, like, trying to fix the water pressure for President Johnson because he was always complaining that the water pressure wasn't strong enough.
All right, that's pretty crazy. Yeah. All right, so what about all the other ushers under the chief? What do they do?
Well, in addition to seeing after the needs of the first family, they also prepared the White House for, you know, the over 7,000 tourists that come in every single week. And that's no small task. But back to the first family side, an usher is always on duty when the president's awake, so until he goes to sleep at night, there's one right there, which often means being on duty late into the night. And each night, one of the ushers will actually deliver the president's briefing book. This is the briefing put together by the president's West Wing staff that brings him up to speed for the next day.
Part-Time Genius from Maximum Fun, a little podcast to get a little more genius every time you listen to Part-Time Genius, available on WVXU's Podcast Central. Next up, our new addition to the Podcast Central collection. It's called Mothers of Invention. It's a new podcast celebrating amazing women doing remarkable things in pursuit of climate justice. Join former Irish president Mary Robinson and comedian Maeve Higgins as they shine the spotlight on mothers of invention from all around the world who are leading the charge against climate change. Whether it's in the boardroom, the courtroom, the front lines, or grassroots, these uplifting and inspiring women are making positive change in their communities, in their countries, and the world. You can hear from these powerful change makers directly, learning what they've done and what they plan to do, and then what you can do to help. From a recent episode of Mothers of Invention titled Taking Over, we turn to Maeve and Mary, who look at women who are helping the world escape our toxic relationship with single-use plastics. Featured is a veritable all-star lineup of climate change warriors, including Kenyan politicians Judy Wakungo and Alice Kodia, and American inventor and materials engineer Chelsea Brigatti, among many others. The women joined together at the show to discuss the various ways they plan to end our plastic addiction.
To me, there is one thing that unifies all Kenyans, irrespective of ethnicity, creed, gender, of socioeconomic status. And that is, we are all addicted to using polythene bags. People were carrying their drinking water, saving their kerosene, buying their vegetables in a polythene bag. 60-70% of the livestock being brought into the abattoirs would have ingested plastic. It was embarrassing. As soon as I got into the office, I hit the ground running at top speed. If we have policies that have been made at the national level, it is the environment secretary that goes onto the ground into all of the counties to help them translate that policy. Engaging, raising awareness, informing. And that's Dr. Alice Kaudia.
By my nature, I feel very constrained when I'm in an office and I'm not hands-on. I feel like I'm not creating impact when I'm not on the ground. So I like being in the field. I like being with the communities. Judy, as a minister, could influence at the highest level possible. That was very key.
The way we went about it is that she would go about smiling and she would be the good cop, and I was always the bad cop.
I had to work with the local community leaders to tell them that when the plastic bag ban is a success, we will all have a healthy environment.
You know, I would crack the whip.
I would tell the women in the villages, please do not ban plastics because dangerous gases are emitted.
We worked extremely well together. We shared the same vision. Together we made a formidable team. The work on the plastics ban in Kenya is as old as probably 15 years. Whenever there were attempts by my predecessors to try and solve this environmental problem, there was always some resistance. The lobby groups are very strong. It took me almost 4 years. 4 years. There are very many members of the Kenya Association of Manufacturers that were totally opposed to the ban because their businesses would be affected. There was a technical committee meeting that I had set up between all the technical personnel from the National Environment Management Authority and also the plastics sector, and they would meet frequently. They would advise me on the progress that they were making. 3 years into having these meetings, I called them and I said, I'm taking over. There's no progress here. You've got lovely meetings. You have got very beautiful minutes, but I'm not seeing any progress. At that point, I said, I'm taking over and I'm making the decision. I gave them a six-month notice. This is now when the court cases started coming in, one court case after another. Threats that I must revoke. Threats that the timing is not good. The popular one was that the cabinet secretary, and that is me, cannot legally ban a material like a plastic bag. The minister did not consult when she banned the plastic bag.
The minister
bag.
Can't just give us 6 months' notice.
You cannot do this in an election year. It's going to inconvenience our vote. There are so many individuals that are involved in this industry. There was going to be loss of jobs. I really empathized with our legal counsel because she had to manage all of those cases. The Kenya Association of Manufacturers started by saying 600,000 jobs are going to be lost. And I said, oh dear, may I have the list of those individuals? May I have the payee per industry? How many were going to be lost? When I asked for that list, the number dropped dramatically from 600,000 to 100,000. But again, could we get those numbers from all industries so that I can assess exactly what the damage is going to be? Whenever I pushed to get the numbers would always be shifted downwards. The labor unions themselves never voiced opposition at all during this time. Our constitution is very clear that every Kenyan has a right to a clean and healthy environment. I was simply following the constitution of Kenya. I sought legal advice. I followed the law to the letter. And I wrote that notice that stated that as of August 28th, 2017, Kenya has banned the use, manufacture, and importation of single-use plastic bags. The penalties range from $15,000 to as high as $38,000, and prison time of between 2 to 4 years. Many people have considered these penalties to be draconian, to be too punitive. Kenyans were extremely innovative and very adept at taking shortcuts. One of the ways of having deterrence to some of these shortcuts is to have very high penalties. By now, it's probably over 120 arrested and paid fines.
A sample from Mothers of Invention with former President Mary Robinson and Maeve Higgins. You can hear more about the amazing women who are fighting to save our planet on Mothers of Invention, now available on WVXU's Podcast Central. Do you love soccer? Do you also have trouble understanding British accents? Well, The Wrong Side of the Pond is the local podcast for you. With coverage on both sides of the pond, the podcast is your A to Z for all things soccer. From low-tier American leagues like FC Cincy, but not for long, to the heights of elite European leagues, Wrong Side of the Pond covers everything you need to know about the world's game. Don't miss out on any of the action as Wrong Side of the Pond guys keep you in the know on trade alerts, league standings, and all the best soccer news. Here's a recent episode of Wrong Side of the Pond called Picking Up Where We Left Off. In the episode, the guys look at the return of English Premier League after a brief recess. The guys talk EPL, trade windows, the weekend's match results, and much more in this sample episode. In fact, in this clip, they talk about what they missed most about Premier League soccer.
I vegged out on Saturday morning, and we'll get into a little bit why that happened and blah, blah, blah in a bit. But I watched 5 straight hours of Premier League soccer.
Attaboy.
And it was fantastic.
Glorious.
It was great in a way. And I don't know if you felt this way when you watched. Uh-huh. But the World Cup did condition me in a way I didn't really expect. The calls are tighter in the World Cup because uh-huh. you get a varying degree of cultures and ways that people referee the game and blah, blah, blah. The Premier League felt like freaking rugby for the mm-hmm. first like weekend, you know, the first couple of days. It felt just like everyone was out there murdering themselves, and you forget that.
Well, because in the reality, like the leagues, yeah, the leagues all have their own like feel and ethos, and mm-hmm. it's kind of like that's how it is. And the World Cup, you're right, it's drastically different and
it's homogenized to a certain extent.
And everything is just under a microscope, so obviously mm-hmm. there's a lot more calls, and everybody's just looking for an angle because it's just this is the moment, the moment where the league is the league, and you're gonna have crazy days, you're gonna have good days.
Mm-hmm.
And you're gonna have days where you're just trash.
Yeah.
But it just so felt good. It was just like, oh yeah, this is how I like it.
Yeah, like I didn't even know I was missing it the way that I was, and then it happened, and it was just fantastic. So glad to have it back. It was a great weekend. Actually, we were served up a fabulous weekend of opening Premier League soccer. Good storylines,
mm-hmm.
Lots of goals, which was good. Makes things a little bit easier to digest as well.
That helps. Yeah.
But yeah, it was just a great return. It's good to see the bars and stuff packed up again. With people turning out in the mornings in a way that you just don't necessarily get throughout the rest of the year. So it was good for most everyone that was involved this weekend.
And that brings us to City 2, Arsenal. No.
Yeah, donut.
0.
Yeah. Let's stress importantly here that it's actually the reverse of that, right?
Right. This was a home game for Arsenal.
2-0 win.
This
for
was
City.
the dawn of a new era.
Yeah.
At the Emirates.
It was weird not seeing Wenger on the touchline, wasn't it? Like, just.
Do you think? Like, where was he?
That's a question.
Did he watch?
There's no way he didn't watch. I refuse to believe, and I also refuse to believe that he didn't highly enjoy them losing that match to a certain extent.
He was laying just on the couch, sipping, I don't know, he's French, so something terrible, like a brandy or whatever.
Someone listening to this podcast is now really
brandy is amazing.
Yeah. It's fine. You believe whatever
you send
you want
that email to contact at wrongsideofthepond.com.
Jeremy's
he's just lighting one cigarette off of the other, mm-hmm. just back to his old smoking ways.
Oh, I can't imagine he wasn't burning them. Just heaters left and right.
Occasionally putting holes in his couch.
Yeah. I'm sure Arsenal sweatpants. Losing probably still bothers him a little bit. I can't see Arsenal being a sweatpants guy. I'd see him being...
I think maybe he just kind of was like, hey, man. I'm done with this life.
I like to imagine that he got dressed up like it was any other normal Arsenal match.
So he was sitting on the couch.
In a suit.
Suit and tie, full vest and mm-hmm. everything.
Oh, yeah.
Pocket watch even for some reason.
Struggling with a zipper.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what
sitting,
I anticipate.
Sitting upright on a couch.
To be a fly in whatever room that
smoking
was.
Smoking and politely, you know, tapping it into an ashtray.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, sipping some cognac or whatever.
Yeah, cognac.
We'll upgrade.
Cognac is definitely what it was.
A snippet from The Wrong Side of the Pond, a great local soccer podcast. Get all the best insider information on the beautiful game with The Wrong Side of the Pond podcast, available now on WVXU's Podcast Central. Now, it's time to check out the podcast chart toppers from around the nation, according to Apple Podcast Charts, and brought to you by the iTunesCharts.net site. From time to time, a podcast rises to the top and then sticks there for a while. Think Serial or S-Town, and they tend to be true crime-focused podcasts. Well, this one is no exception. It's Up and Vanished. Season 1 was a hit, and now Season 2 is dominating the charts again. The new season focuses on the disappearance of a young mother, Crystal Reisinger, from a remote mountain town in Colorado. Host Payne Lindsay, a filmmaker turned amateur investigator, travels to Colorado to trace Reisinger's path. That's Up and Vanished, Season 2, number 1 on the Apple Podcast charts. That wraps up this episode of Start Here, WVXU's Discovery Podcast. And speaking of discovery, astronomical discovery, that is, you want to check out our newest original podcast, Looking Up, with Dean Regas and Anna Heyman. Dean's the outreach astronomer at the Cincinnati Observatory and co-host of the PBS series Stargazers and author of the book Facts from Space. Anna's the observatory's director of development with an innate curiosity about the cosmos. That's Looking Up, now at WVXU.org. And if you're turning into a podcast junkie and just can't get enough, try these two new discovery resources, NPR's The Big Listen with Laura Ober. You get an audio peek into great storytelling podcasts. And for a more blog-like written review and recommendation, NPR has Earbud.fm. They use unique categories to help you discover podcasts with things like advice, do it like a lady, and big ideas. And of course, Jim Nolan, Kevin Reynolds, and the WVXU staff feature our favorites on Podcast Central at WVXU.org. That's where we'll add your recommendations if you just email us at podcast@wvxu.org or call 513-294-8030 and leave us a voicemail. I'm Trip Eldridge for WVXU, and thank you for choosing to start here.